友们，大家好，今天是7月3号，星期五，欢迎收看《美国观察》。美国国会众议院星期三无异议地通过了一项制裁法案，目的在于惩罚中国强行推行港版国安法。众议院议长佩洛西在一份声明中表示说，北京的行为严重违反了一国两制的承诺，并且港版国安法是一部危险的法律。
The law is a brutal, sweeping crackdown against the people of Hong Kong, intended to destroy the freedoms they were promised.
在众议院通过香港自治法案后，隔天星期四，美国国会参议院也无异议通过众议院香港自治法案版本，制裁破坏香港自治的官员和与其有业务往来的银行。法案接下来将送交白宫，等待总统签署生效。在此之前，白宫采取一些行动，比如停止向香港出口军用产品和相关技术，限制某些中共官员的签证等。中国全国人大常委会星期二通过的港区国家安全法规定，对所谓勾结境外势力等界定模糊的罪行实施严厉惩罚。法律第38条规定，非香港居民在境外针对香港实施该法规定的犯罪，也属该法适用范围。美国国务卿蓬佩奥星期三表示，这可能也包括美国人。他对生活在香港的每个人，包括美国人的安全深切忧虑。他说，这一规定太蛮横，是对全世界各国的冒犯。
美国国务卿蓬佩奥6月中旬发表了题为《中国共产党的龌龊宣传》的媒体声明。在媒体声明中，他谴责了中共利用乔治·弗洛伊德的悲剧死亡来进行外宣，并且批评中共将美国的反种族主义抗议和香港的抗议混为一谈，并且反击了中共所谓的美国的伪善主义还有双重标准。就此问题，我采访了美国的无党派组织德国马歇尔基金会的研究员布莱特·舍费尔。他说，中国的外宣正在借鉴俄罗斯外宣的那又怎么说主义，试图用错误的逻辑对等关系来转移矛盾。我们来看采访。
First, the question is, following the tragic death of Mr. George Floyd, according to multiple media analysis, China has been flooding Western social media sites to push divisive messages and criticize Washington's handling of the crisis.So one of the most notable ones is Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying. She tweeted, "I can't breathe" in response to America's criticism of China's handling of Hong Kong. So can you share with us your observation on how China is exploiting the protests to spread its own propaganda?
I think the thing that has been interesting watching how China has gone about its messaging around George Floyd is it's the first time we've really seen a campaign on a Western social media platform where China has aggressively messaged about a topic that doesn't directly relate to its own interests. So we've, of course, seen campaigns around the Xinjiang and the protests in Hong Kong, but this was a little bit different because, of course, it was a domestic U.S. topic.But I think what we saw in the example that you pointed out, a lot of the messaging was about supposed double standard or hypocrisy from America, that the way we treat protesters abroad is different how we treat protesters at home. So I think what China and also Russia and Iran were trying to get across in some of their messaging was that, frankly, the U.S. administration and the U.S. in general is just hypocritical, that we don't basically practice what we preach.And that was the message that we saw sort of at the forefront of what China was trying to get across in social media.
Mm-hmm. So why is China doing this? What is it trying to achieve?
Well, I think it's a good tactic to deflect criticism, right? Because if you're able to say, you know, those who are criticizing us are frankly just as bad or doing the same things that they're criticizing us for. It's a classic case of what the Russians call whataboutism. So it's a way of turning criticism around and deflecting it back at those who are criticizing you. So I think it's frankly an effective technique, and we've seen other countries use this for quite some time in their propaganda as a way of saying, you know, you shouldn't criticize us when, frankly, you're doing the same things or you're doing worse. So it's just a way of kind of changing the conversation. And maybe actually it's a bit of a technique to try to get the U.S. to stop criticizing China in the future as a way for China not to criticize us when we have issues in the United States.
China's behavior actually prompted Secretary of State Pompeo to issue a statement titled on CCP's obscene propaganda. So he compared how the U.S. and China handled freedom of speech and protests. Can you please elaborate more on this, why U.S. protests and protests in Hong Kong are fundamentally different, and why how the police are handling the protests are very different as well?
You know, I would say I think the important thing in the secretary's statement was about how the media is covering protests here, or has been able to cover protests here because of our plural media ecosystem, the fact we have pretty robust First Amendment protections for free speech. But I think the key point, again, is that, you know, I'm having this conversation with you on an American-funded network, and I'm able to talk about and criticize my own government or the police within the United States in a way that you're frankly just not within China. So I think that was the key thing that I would pull out of the secretary's statement is, yes, we have problems here. Some of the actions of the police were unacceptable and unjustifiable, but media covered it, and we were able to have a conversation about it, and we're able to hopefully correct some of those things in our society that are unjust and wrong.
Russia is also trying to divide U.S. society and use this these protests. So what are the differences and similarities between China and Russia's methods?
Well, frankly, around the George Floyd protests, we saw a real convergence in the messaging used from Russia, China, and Iran. For about 3 weeks in a row, we saw them engaged in the same hashtags. So George Floyd, Black Lives Matter. They were jumping on hashtags being used by domestic activists in the United States. And a lot of the messaging was the same. So we saw across all three countries, you know, as I mentioned earlier, statements about the U.S. being hypocritical, that the U.S. criticizes protests when they happen in Russia and Iran. But look at what's happening in the United States. It's the same thing, trying to have this sort of false equivalency. So around George Floyd, we saw really the three countries messaging in very much the same way. I mean, there were subtle differences, of course. China was more concerned about Hong Kong. Iran was more concerned about sanctions and protests in Tehran. Russia has always criticized the U.S. for basically everything as a way of deflecting from some of its issues at home. So, you know, and I also mentioned this sort of whataboutism tactic. It's a great technique in propaganda to turn the conversation around and say, you know, you can't criticize us because look at what you do. And the Russians and the Soviets have done that for 60, 70 years, particularly around race. I mean, race has always been a real easy topic for a Russian propagandist to exploit because, of course, we have racism and racial issues in the United States. So to see China jump on that, I think they may have learned some lessons from Russia and seen over the years that this is an effective technique to try to undermine U.S. credibility abroad.
Now I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming U.S. presidential election. Many are concerned that China will try to influence the 2020 election. What are the ways that the Chinese government may try to influence the election, and what should we look out for?
Well, I'm frankly concerned about a lot of different actors trying to influence the 2020 election, including domestic actors. And I think the concerns are heightened right now because of the pandemic. So voting is just not going to happen in the same way it normally does because of health concerns. So you're going to have changes to the status quo of how people have typically voted in the U.S. And anytime there's a change, that's a real opening for disinformation. Because if you've always voted the same place, it's pretty hard to convince people, you know, this time around you can text your vote in, or you can tweet it, or in fact, the election has been moved a week later. So I think that's one. You can mislead people about how, when, and where to vote. And that's a concern with many different actors. If you're talking about nation-state propaganda, you know, it's hard to tell what China might try to accomplish in the 2020 election. I've seen reports, you know, saying that they may weigh in on the side of Trump, against Trump. It's not clear, but I think what needs to be looked at is protecting the information space in general, making sure that conversations happening on social media are authentic, that state-backed actors are not able to run large-scale bot networks, not able to flood the information space with false or misleading or divisive content. You know, so I think it's more when you talk about what we need to do to protect ourselves.
My last question, do you have any suggestions for the policymakers on how to counter China's propaganda?
Well, I think one of the best ways to counter propaganda is not necessarily to try to counter it head on. I think one of our strengths, you know, I mentioned with having an open media is to show that to people in other countries. So you can do that, I mean, through Voice of America and other networks, but also by being open about having critical content about what's happening in the United States. So we're not just telling people that, hey, we're different than you are, or pointing out flaws in other countries. We're really showing people that, you know, we do have a media that covers our faults. We are allowed to criticize our own government. And then pointing out some basic truths. I mean, the fact that China has used Western social media platforms to criticize the U.S. Is a point that should be pointed out, you know, I think significantly, because, of course, Chinese diplomats are using Twitter and Facebook, and Chinese citizens are not allowed to use those same platforms. So I think we should point out some of these inequities in the information space, not necessarily try to counter every different message, but just point out the fact that, look, Chinese diplomats, the Chinese government are using Twitter and Facebook and other platforms to criticize the U.S., while at home, they've deemed those platforms too dangerous to allow their own citizens to be on and criticize Beijing. So I think that's the way you really should go about countering it, you know, just showing the structural inequities as opposed to trying to put out every different disinformation fire.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
美国对抗新冠疫情富有成效，并且说自己创造了历史性的就业数据。他还呼吁民众要勤洗手、戴口罩。来看美国之音白宫记者黄耀义的报道。7月1号，美国当天就出现了超过1万2000起的新型冠状病毒的病例。那么这是美国在疫情爆发以来呢一天当中出现最多的确诊人数。那么佛罗里达州呢更是一天之内就出现了超过1万起的病例。同时呢，看到在德州东部的一个小城市叫做克马市当中的整个警察局更是全部的警察都要接受隔离。那么目前呢，累计美国境内有276万人确诊，死亡人数超过了13万人。那么由于对抗疫情呢，过去几个月美国各地都封锁经济活动，旅游业、餐饮业、服务业都损失惨重。而制造业跟食品业也因为在工厂当中爆发了群聚感染，也多有停工。不过5月以来已经有些州在未达到联邦政府建议的开放标准，就已经重启了经济活动。所以许多 这个月又创下另外一个历史性的记录。现在劳工部的报告增加了480万个工作，而失业率下降到 11.1%。 那么呢，这个百分比是 11.1%。 那特朗普总统呢非常满意这样的情况，并且赞许这样子的经济数据。
We have some areas where we're putting out the flames or the fires, and that's working out well. We're working very closely with governors, and I think it's working out very well. I think you'll see that shortly. In June, we added 2.1 million leisure and hospitality jobs, 740,000 retail jobs, 568,000 education and healthcare jobs, 357,000 service jobs. These are all historic numbers.And 356,000 manufacturing jobs, and manufacturing looks like it's ready to really take off at a level that it's never been.
特朗普总统在简报会上呢，并且说他的政府采取了积极的防疫措施来保护高风险的美国人，并且呢让低风险的美国人可以回去上班。那么他同时也说让医疗专家继续处理某一些疫情严重的热点地区。特朗普总统也建议美国人要遵守公共卫生专家所提出来的防疫建议。
All of these people are working with governors and local officials to restore best practices, and that's what we've done. That includes face covering, social distancing, testing, and personal hygiene. Wash your hands. State officials will decide how rapidly to open their economies. That's largely up to them.
特朗普总统星期三接受福克斯商业台的专访的时候呢，曾经说过，他说现在他是完全支持要戴口罩。那不过呢，美国国立过敏与传染病研究所的主任医师福奇医生星期二则是说呢，美国的疫情正在朝着错误的方向前进。很明显的，美国并没有完全控制住疫情，而如果以后出现一天10万个确诊病例，他也不会感到意外。不过特朗普总统星期三在福克斯的专访当中则是说，他说未来的某个时间点呢，病毒就会自然的消失。那本周末星期四号呢，是美国的国庆，也是独立纪念日。那么去年的美国国庆呢，白宫是在华盛顿的林肯纪念堂举行了大型的庆祝活动，包括展示军队、坦克车、装甲车、阅兵典礼、飞机飞越上空的表演等等。特朗普总统还致辞。那么今年因为疫情的关系呢，白宫的活动局限于白宫内部及外面草坪上的音乐会。特朗普总统在于7月3号星期五，则是前往俗称总统山的拉叙摩山来举办千人的烟火庆典。不过呢，居住在当地的美国原住民还有医学专家都担心，这么多人聚集在一起可能会造成疫情的大爆发。而环保专家也呼吁呢，第一个，在那边放烟火的话可能会对当地的生态环境造成冲击，另外也可能会引发森林大火，所以希望特朗普总统可以三思。以上是美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅的报道。
郭杰希是一位非裔和华裔混血儿，他因为对中国文化的兴趣而在北京读研，不过却受到了一些不友好的待遇。而如今美国接二连三的警察暴力事件也让他感到抑郁，他觉得在中国和美国都没有他的容身之处。下面是美国之音记者许湘云的采访报道。
27岁的郭杰希来自加州，他的父亲是非裔，母亲是第二代华裔。基于对根源的好奇，大学毕业后他到北京读了2年书，那段时光却成为他最灰暗的日子。因为肤色，他感受到旁人的另眼相待。
Sometimes I would go out with my roommate who's from Kenya, so another black student in China. We would go out together and people would look at us like freaks and just want to take pictures.
加州大学伯克利分校毕业的他，在找英语教师兼职时处处碰壁，工资也不及白人。
They told me that I was not marketable as a teacher for English classes to the parents. And they're like, oh, we're so sorry. Like, we would love to have you, but the parents won't accept you, so we can't hire you because we can't market you.
在中国，波杰西感到格格不入。在美国，他因为肤色感到不安。
Honestly, when I was in China, I was incredibly depressed.And almost suicidal because I couldn't stand being in China and I was terrified to go back to the US because there had just been killings back then of Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, and all these others, and no one did anything.
那段时间他感到无路可走，中国和美国似乎都没有他的容身之处。最无助的时候，她在教会遇到现在的丈夫，她感谢夫家将她视为己出。
Because here, even in the United States, a lot of Chinese American families, I can be friends, but it was clear I could not be a part of the family.
毕业后，波杰西回到美国工作，但在中国累积的阴影以及美国持续出现的针对非裔的暴力行为，使她每星期需做2次心理治疗。非裔男子乔治·弗洛伊德的死去令他愤怒和悲伤，住在白人社区的他因此精神更加紧绷。
I would say I feel more physically safe in China because here it's violent racism. Like I could have the cops called on me at any time, or I could have the cops walk by and want to talk to me at any time. That's physically violent andlife-threatening and terrifying to think about. That doesn't exist in China, but what does exist in China is what feels like an immovable wall. Like, as a professional, like, I am trying to build my career. I'm highly educated. I'm working hard. But in China, that's never going to be the first thing that people see. They're going to see my name. They're going to see my skin.
波杰西说，自己的思想观念和行为模式都接近华人，但不曾被当作华裔对待。他将以自身经历告诉孩子，种族中立的社会尚不存在，自我保护才是上策。美国之音许湘云，华盛顿报道。
根据美国劳工统计局的数字，美国目前的失业率大约在13%，仍停留在历史最高水平，这使得许多人生活非常困难，尤其是非洲裔和西语裔美国人。
扎里·康奈尔三月初冒了风险，在马里兰州蒙哥马利县开设自己的美发沙龙。他的生意经营了还不到一个月，政府要求人们待在家里以减缓新冠病毒传播的命令就已经下达，他也被迫关店停业。现在在州政府放宽限制之后，即使他可以在六月初重新开业，康奈尔要脱离经济困境还言之过早。
2.5 months I'm back, I'm all right, I'm back, and the phone, you upside down now, you know, you upside down。
新冠大流行为少数族裔带来不成比例的严重伤害。
We have higher levels of unemployment for Black Americans and Hispanics, relatively lower unemployment for whites.
根据美国国家经济研究局，非洲裔美国人的企业遭到特别沉重的打击，他们的生意下降了41%。阿尔方索·克罗斯是乔治亚州亚特兰大一家酒吧的共同业主，酒吧在三月中旬关闭后，最近才重新开业。
Right now, you have this particular COVID scenario deeply affecting economically African American communities because they were never set up to win to begin with. By operating in a part of town that is underdeveloped as other parts of town, you now are setting that business owner up for failure when there are economic downturns.
专家说，大流行病暴露了现有的种族不平等的差异。
African American businesses come to the pandemic smaller, less substantially capitalized, less of a reserve in cash and money, and therefore harder to weather the storm.
与此同时，根据美国政府的统计，全国的拉美裔失业率已跃升到将近18%，是所有群体当中最高的。
We have no money, we have no food, and came here to get something.
I have not had any income since last day of March, and I'm just like trying to survive this.
尽管几个州已经开始重新开放经济活动，允许某些企业雇佣更多人，但专家表示，任何人都不用期待快速反弹。
This is a social problem of a significant magnitude, and I think that as these numbers continue to flood out, showing the number of unemployed being at essentially unthinkable levels, elected officials are going to have to pass another round of legislation.
与此同时，开店的业主加里·康奈尔说，现在需要的是耐力。
As an entrepreneur, you have to be patient, man. You have to be patient and believe.
美国之音记者塔博报道。
在乔治·弗洛伊德不幸身亡后的一个月，抗议警察暴力和争取种族平权的示威活动不仅席卷全美，而且遍布全球。
倡导种族正义的人士说，过去一个月在美国各地发生的抗议活动不是新的，也不仅仅是因为乔治·弗洛伊德的死。抗议行动是基于多年的组织和越来越多的人死于警察暴行。
It arrives at a moment in which the public's patience for police misconduct has been expended. So the George Floyd video arrives afterthe video of Philando Castile in Minneapolis, after the video of Jamar Clark in Minneapolis, but also after the video of Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Laquan McDonald.
一些示威者指出，新冠疫情是怎么成为促进全国抗议活动持续发展的助力的。
I already have to fight systemic racism. I have to fight a virus that I do not understand, that no one understands, and you're still killing me on national TV. Like, just something's gotta give.
今年，社交媒体、筹款人和请愿书伴随着街头集会同时出现。
You have the highest unemployment rate you've ever seen before. People actually have the time right now to go out into the streets. Now you realize that you and your friends can, you know, create a petition, can sign something, can, you know, get folks out on the street, can volunteer to bring water.
最近几周走上街头的非裔美国人指出，针对他们的歧视和暴力并不是什么新鲜事。
I live it, right? Because I was born a black woman, right? So this is not something that I'm just coming to realize.
活动人士指出，社交媒体的组织和教育的增加促进了人们对示威运动的认识。
Young people crafting hashtags, crafting messages, engaged in serial strategic disruption of daily life, globalizing the message, tying it to a set of public policy reforms, and pushing the conversation, changing the civic vocabulary.
尽管2020年黑人生命主题的抗议活动具体情况与以往有所不同，但活动人士认为，目前的运动是多年组织的结果。
Based on my 25 years of doing this work around the country,This is a serious moment at the dawn of a movement. I thought so 5 years ago. I don't think I was wrong.
布鲁克斯和基层活动人士相信，目前的运动将影响真正的变革，并指出这一运动已经引发了地方和联邦政府关于警察改革的讨论。美国之音记者。
新常态之中，视频会议已经独领风骚，不过人们仍然有可能受到干扰。在这个时候，虚拟现实技术就提供了另外一种选择。
如果你曾经参加过这样的电话会议，你可能有过人们同时发言的经历。然后呢，还有这种情况。
If someone's dog comes into it or someone stops paying attention,
那么你可能会错过别人在说什么。瑞安·奥滕斯上的虚拟现实，也就是 VR 在线商务课，消除了视频电话会议打岔分神的困扰。
I can't see my phone. I can't see an email pop up. So I'm fully focused on a great learning environment.
帕格尼虚拟现实公司通过他们的奇美拉项目，创造出奥斯腾在坦普大学课堂上的虚拟现实经验。学生以化身出现在虚拟课堂，而老师则化身或以直播或预录的真人录像出现。
This still gets the feeling of.Being a community, our sound is positional. So if that person spoke and they were to my left, I knew to look to the left and I would see them.
随着虚拟现实硬件的改进，手机和手持控制器得以通过摄像头和传感器追踪头部和手部的动作。当参与者的手在现实世界中移动，他们化身的手也会跟着动作。随着需求的增加，最大的挑战是要在大流行病的封锁期间买到虚拟现实耳机。随着工厂重新开始生产耳机
，hardware availability a lot of it is where the hardware is manufactured. So a point being made that a lot of this is coming from China.
奥滕斯警告说，任何想要尝试虚拟现实会议的人，每次沉浸在沉重的耳机里的时间都不应超过一小时。
Usually the dizziness and headaches would start towards the last 5 to 10 minutes. I could tell.It was right around the time. It was almost like my body's like I'm done.
虚拟现实的其他应用包括礼拜仪式和娱乐活动。美国之音记者李爱琳报道。
好的，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容。感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。 友们，大家好，今天是7月3号，星期五，欢迎收看《美国观察》。美国国会众议院星期三无异议地通过了一项制裁法案，目的在于惩罚中国强行推行港版国安法。众议院议长佩洛西在一份声明中表示说，北京的行为严重违反了一国两制的承诺，并且港版国安法是一部危险的法律。
The law is a brutal, sweeping crackdown against the people of Hong Kong, intended to destroy the freedoms they were promised.
在众议院通过香港自治法案后，隔天星期四，美国国会参议院也无异议通过众议院香港自治法案版本，制裁破坏香港自治的官员和与其有业务往来的银行。法案接下来将送交白宫，等待总统签署生效。在此之前，白宫采取一些行动，比如停止向香港出口军用产品和相关技术，限制某些中共官员的签证等。中国全国人大常委会星期二通过的港区国家安全法规定，对所谓勾结境外势力等界定模糊的罪行实施严厉惩罚。法律第38条规定，非香港居民在境外针对香港实施该法规定的犯罪，也属该法适用范围。美国国务卿蓬佩奥星期三表示，这可能也包括美国人。他对生活在香港的每个人，包括美国人的安全深切忧虑。他说，这一规定太蛮横，是对全世界各国的冒犯。
美国国务卿蓬佩奥6月中旬发表了题为《中国共产党的龌龊宣传》的媒体声明。在媒体声明中，他谴责了中共利用乔治·弗洛伊德的悲剧死亡来进行外宣，并且批评中共将美国的反种族主义抗议和香港的抗议混为一谈，并且反击了中共所谓的美国的伪善主义还有双重标准。就此问题，我采访了美国的无党派组织德国马歇尔基金会的研究员布莱特·舍费尔。他说，中国的外宣正在借鉴俄罗斯外宣的那又怎么说主义，试图用错误的逻辑对等关系来转移矛盾。我们来看采访。
First, the question is following the tragic death of Mr. George Floyd, according to multiple media analysis, China has been flooding Western social media sites to push divisive messages and criticize Washington's handling of the crisis.So one of the most notable ones is Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying. She tweeted, "I can't breathe" in response to America's criticism of China's handling of Hong Kong. So can you share with us your observation on how China is exploiting the protests to spread its own propaganda?
I think the thing that has been interesting watching how China has gone about its messaging around George Floyd is it's the first time we've really seen a campaign on a Western social media platform where China has aggressively messaged about a topic that doesn't directly relate to its own interests. So we've, of course, seen campaigns around the Xinjiang and the protests in Hong Kong, but this was a little bit different because, of course, it was a domestic U.S. topic.But I think what we saw in the example that you pointed out, a lot of the messaging was about supposed double standard or hypocrisy from America, that the way we treat protesters abroad is different how we treat protesters at home. So I think what China and also Russia and Iran were trying to get across in some of their messaging was that, frankly, the U.S. administration and the U.S. in general is just hypocritical, that we don't basically practice what we preach.And that was the message that we saw sort of at the forefront of what China was trying to get across in social media.
Mm-hmm. So why is China doing this? What is it trying to achieve?
Well, I think it's a good tactic to deflect criticism, right? Because if you're able to say, you know, those who are criticizing us are frankly just as bad or doing the same things that they're criticizing us for, it's a classic case of what the Russians call whataboutism. So it's a way of turning a criticism around and deflecting it back at those who are criticizing you. So I think it's frankly an effective technique, and we've seen other countries use this for quite some time in their propaganda as a way of saying, you know, you shouldn't criticize us when, frankly, you're doing the same things or you're doing worse. So it's just a way of kind of changing the conversation. And maybe actually it's a bit of a technique to try to get the U.S. to stop criticizing China in the future as a way for China not to criticize us when we have issues in the United States.
China's behavior actually prompted Secretary of State Pompeo to issue a statement titled on CCP's obscene propaganda. So he compared how the U.S. and China handled freedom of speech and protests. Can you please elaborate more on this, why U.S. protests and protests in Hong Kong are fundamentally different, and why how the police are handling the protests are very different as well?
You know, I would say I think the important thing in the secretary's statement was about how the media is covering protests here, or has been able to cover protests here because of our plural media ecosystem, the fact we have pretty robust First Amendment protections for free speech. But I think the key point, again, is that, you know, I'm having this conversation with you on an American-funded network, and I'm able to talk about and criticize my own government or the police within the United States in a way that you're frankly just not within China. So I think that was the key thing that I would pull out of the secretary's statement is, yes, we have problems here. Some of the actions of the police were unacceptable and unjustifiable, but media covered it, and we were able to have a conversation about it, and we're able to hopefully correct some of those things in our society that are unjust and wrong.
Russia is also trying to divide U.S. society and use this these protests. So what are the differences and similarities between China and Russia's methods?
Well, frankly, around the George Floyd protests, we saw a real convergence in the messaging used from Russia, China, and Iran. For about 3 weeks in a row, we saw them engaged in the same hashtags. So George Floyd, Black Lives Matter. They were jumping on hashtags being used by domestic activists in the United States. And a lot of the messaging was the same. So we saw across all three countries, you know, as I mentioned earlier, statements about the U.S. being hypocritical, that the U.S. criticizes protests when they happen in Russia and Iran. But look at what's happening in the United States. It's the same thing, trying to have this sort of false equivalency. So around George Floyd, we saw really the three countries messaging in very much the same way. I mean, there were subtle differences, of course. China was more concerned about Hong Kong. Iran was more concerned about sanctions and protests in Tehran. Russia has always criticized the U.S. for basically everything as a way of deflecting from some of its issues at home. So, you know, and I also mentioned this sort of whataboutism tactic. It's a great technique in propaganda to turn the conversation around and say, you know, you can't criticize us because look at what you do. And the Russians and the Soviets have done that for 60, 70 years, particularly around race. I mean, race has always been a real easy topic for a Russian propagandist to exploit because, of course, we have racism and racial issues in the United States. So to see China jump on that, I think they may have learned some lessons from Russia and seen over the years that this is an effective technique to try to undermine U.S. credibility abroad.
But now I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming U.S. presidential election. Many are concerned that China will try to influence the 2020 election. What are the ways that the Chinese government may try to influence the election, and what should we look out for?
Well, I'm frankly concerned about a lot of different actors trying to influence the 2020 election, including domestic actors. And I think the concerns are heightened right now because of the pandemic. So voting is just not going to happen in the same way it normally does because of health concerns. So you're going to have changes to the status quo of how people have typically voted in the U.S. And anytime there's a change, that's a real opening for disinformation. Because if you've always voted the same place, it's pretty hard to convince people, you know, this time around you can text your vote in, or you can tweet it, or in fact, the election has been moved a week later. So I think that's one. You can mislead people about how, when, and where to vote. And that's a concern with many different actors. If you're talking about nation-state propaganda, you know, it's hard to tell what China might try to accomplish in the 2020 election. I've seen reports, you know, saying that they may weigh in on the side of Trump, against Trump. It's not clear, but I think what needs to be looked at is protecting the information space in general, making sure that conversations happening on social media are authentic, that state-backed actors are not able to run large-scale bot networks, not able to flood the information space with false or misleading or divisive content. You know, so I think it's more when you talk about what we need to do to protect ourselves.
My last question, do you have any suggestions for the policymakers on how to counter China's propaganda?
Well, I think one of the best ways to counter propaganda is not necessarily to try to counter it head on. I think one of our strengths, you know, I mentioned with having an open media is to show that to people in other countries. So you can do that, I mean, through Voice of America and other networks, but also by being open about having critical content about what's happening in the United States. So we're not just telling people that, hey, we're different than you are, or pointing out flaws in other countries. We're really showing people that, you know, we do have a media that covers our faults. We are allowed to criticize our own government. And then pointing out some basic truths. I mean, the fact that China has used Western social media platforms to criticize the U.S. Is a point that should be pointed out, you know, I think significantly, because, of course, Chinese diplomats are using Twitter and Facebook, and Chinese citizens are not allowed to use those same platforms. So I think we should point out some of these inequities in the information space, not necessarily try to counter every different message, but just point out the fact that, look, Chinese diplomats, the Chinese government are using Twitter and Facebook and other platforms to criticize the U.S., while at home, they've deemed those platforms too dangerous to allow their own citizens to be on and criticize Beijing. So I think that's the way you really should go about countering it, you know, just showing the structural inequities as opposed to trying to put out every different disinformation fire.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
赞扬美国对抗新冠疫情富有成效，并且说自己创造了历史性的就业数据。他还呼吁民众要勤洗手、戴口罩。来看美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅的报道。
7月1号，美国当天就出现了超过52000起的新型冠状病毒的病例。那么这是美国在疫情爆发以来呢，一天当中出现最多的确诊人数。那么佛罗里达州呢，更是一天之内就出现了超过10000起的病例。同时呢，看到在德州东部的一个小城市叫做克马市当中的整个警察局，更是全部的警察都要接受隔离。那么目前呢，累计美国境内有275万人确诊，死亡人数超过了13万人。那么由于对抗疫情呢，过去几个月美国各地都封锁经济活动，旅游业、餐饮业、服务业都损失惨重，而制造业跟食品业也因为在工厂当中爆发了群聚感染，也多有停工。不过五月以来，已经有些州在未达到联邦政府建议的开放标准，就已经重启了经济活动，所以许多人也开始上班。七月号美国劳工部公布最新的就业报告，白宫在星期四上午9点临时宣布特朗普总统于9点半就亲自在白宫新闻简报室当中会见传媒。那么在简报会上呢，特朗普总统说，上个月的失业率创下了历史的新高，这个月又创下另外一个历史性的记录。现在劳工部的报告增加了480万个工作，而失业率下降到 11.1%。那么呢，这个百分比是11.1%。那特朗普总统呢，非常满意这样的情况，并且赞许这样子的经济数据。
We have some areas where we're putting out the flames or the fires, and that's working out well. We're working very closely with governors.And I think it's working out very well. I think you'll see that shortly. In June, we added 2.1 million leisure and hospitality jobs, 740,000 retail jobs, 568,000 education and healthcare jobs, 357,000 service jobs. These are all historic numbers. And 356,000 manufacturing jobs. And manufacturing looks like it's ready to really take off at a level that it's never been.
特朗普总统在简报会上呢，并且说他的政府采取了积极的防疫措施来保护高风险的美国人，并且呢让低风险的美国人可以回去上班。那么他同时也说让医疗专家继续处理某一些疫情严重的热点地区。特朗普总统也建议美国人要遵守公共卫生专家所提出来的防疫建议。
All of these people are working with governors and local officials to restore best practices, and that's what we've doneThat includes face covering, social distancing, testing, and personal hygiene. Wash your hands. State officials will decide how rapidly to open their economies. That's largely up to them.
特朗普总统星期三接受福克斯商业台的专访的时候呢，曾经说过，他说现在他是完全支持要戴口罩。那不过呢，美国国立过敏与传染病研究所的主任医师福奇医生星期二则是说呢，美国的疫情正在朝着错误的方向前进。很明显的，美国并没有完全控制住疫情，而如果以后出现一天10万个确诊病例，他也不会感到意外。不过特朗普总统星期三在福克斯的专访当中则是说，他说未来的某个时间点呢，病毒就会自然的消失。那本周末星期四号呢，是美国的国庆，也是独立纪念日。那么去年的美国国庆呢，白宫是在华盛顿的林肯纪念堂举行了大型的庆祝活动，包括展示军队坦克车、装甲车、阅兵典礼、飞机飞越上空的表演等等。特朗普总统还致辞。那么今年因为疫情的关系呢，白宫的活动局限于白宫内部及外面草坪上的音乐会。特朗普总统在于7月3号星期五，则是前往俗称总统山的拉叙摩山来举办千人的烟火庆典。不过呢，居住在当地的美国原住民还有医学专家都担心，这么多人聚集在一起可能会造成疫情的大爆发。而环保专家也呼吁呢，第一个，在那边放烟火的话可能会对当地的生态环境造成冲击，另外也可能会引发森林大火，所以希望特朗普总统可以三思。以上是美国之音白宫记者黄耀义的报道。
波杰西是一位非裔和华裔混血儿，他因为对中国文化的兴趣而在北京读研，不过却受到了一些不友好的待遇。而如今美国接二连三的警察暴力事件也让他感到抑郁，他觉得在中国和美国都没有他的容身之处。下面是美国之音记者许湘云的采访报道。
27岁的波杰西来自加州，他的父亲是非裔，母亲是第二代华裔。基于对根源的好奇，大学毕业后他到北京读了2年书，那段时光却成为他最灰暗的日子。因为肤色，他感受到旁人的另眼相待。
Sometimes I would go out with my roommate who's from Kenya, so another black student in China. We would go out together and people would look at us like freaks and just want to take pictures.
加州大学伯克利分校毕业的他，在找英语教师兼职时处处碰壁，工资也不及白人。
They told me that I was not marketable as a teacher for English classes to the parents. And they're like, oh, we're so sorry. Like, we would love to have you, but the parents won't accept you, so we can't hire you because we can't market you.
在中国，波杰西感到格格不入。在美国，他因为肤色感到不安。
Honestly, when I was in China, I was incredibly depressed.And almost suicidal because I couldn't stand being in China and I was terrified to go back to the US because there had just been killings back then of Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, and all these others, and no one did anything.
那段时间他感到无路可走，中国和美国似乎都没有他的容身之处。最无助的时候，她在教会遇到现在的丈夫，她感谢夫家将她视为己出。
Because here, even in the United States, a lot of Chinese American families, I can be friends, but it was clear I could not be a part of the family.
毕业后，波杰西回到美国工作，但在中国累积的阴影以及美国持续出现的针对非裔的暴力行为，使他每星期需做2次心理治疗。非裔男子乔治·弗洛伊德的死去令他愤怒和悲伤，住在白人社区的他因此精神更加紧绷。
I would say I feel more physically safe in China because here it's violent racism. Like I could have the cops called on me at any time, or I could have the cops walk by and want to talk to me at any time. That's physically violent andlife-threatening and terrifying to think about. That doesn't exist in China, but what does exist in China is what feels like an immovable wall. Like, as a professional, like, I am trying to build my career. I'm highly educated. I'm working hard. But in China, that's never going to be the first thing that people see.They're going to see my name. They're going to see my skin.
波杰西说，自己的思想观念和行为模式都接近华人，但不曾被当作华裔对待。他将以自身经历告诉孩子，种族中立的社会尚不存在，自我保护才是上策。美国之音许湘云，华盛顿报道。
根据美国劳工统计局的数字，美国目前的失业率大约在13%，仍停留在历史最高水平，这使得许多人生活非常困难，尤其是非洲裔和西语裔美国人。
加里·康奈尔三月初冒了风险，在马里兰州蒙哥马利县开设自己的美发沙龙。他的生意经营了还不到一个月，政府要求人们待在家里以减缓新冠病毒传播的命令就已经下达，他也被迫关店停业。现在在州政府放宽限制之后，即使他可以在六月初重新开业，康奈尔要脱离经济困境还言之过早。
2.5 months I'm back, I'm a rent, I'm back, and a phone. You upside down now, you know? You upside down.
新冠大流行为少数族裔带来不成比例的严重伤害。
We have higher levels of unemployment for Black Americans and Hispanics, relatively lower unemployment for whites.
根据美国国家经济研究局，非洲裔美国人的企业遭到特别沉重的打击，他们的生意下降了41%。阿尔方索·克罗斯是乔治亚州亚特兰大一家酒吧的共同业主，酒吧在三月中旬关闭后，最近才重新开业。
Right now.You have this particular COVID scenario deeply affecting economically African American communities because they were never set up to win to begin with. By operating in a part of town that is underdeveloped as other parts of town, you now are setting that business owner up for failure when there are economic downturns.
专家说，大流行病暴露了现有的种族不平等的差异。
African American businesses come to the pandemic smaller.Less substantially capitalized, less of a reserve in cash and money, and therefore harder to weather the storm.
与此同时，根据美国政府的统计，全国的拉美裔失业率已跃升到将近18%，是所有群体当中最高的。
We have no money, we have no food. Can he have to get something?
I have not had any income since last day of March. And I'm just like trying to survive this.
尽管几个州已经开始重新开放经济活动，允许某些企业雇佣更多人，但专家表示，任何人都不用期待快速反弹。
This is a social problem of a significant magnitude, and I think.That as these numbers continue to flood out, showing the number of unemployed being at essentially unthinkable levels, elected officials are going to have to pass another round of legislation.
与此同时，开店的业主加里·康奈尔说，现在需要的是耐力。
As an entrepreneur, you have to be patient, man. You have to be patient and believe.
美国之音记者塔博报道。
乔治·弗洛伊德不幸身亡后的一个月，抗议警察暴力和争取种族平权的示威活动不仅席卷全美，而且遍布全球。
倡导种族正义的人士说，过去一个月在美国各地发生的抗议活动不是新的，也不仅仅是因为乔治·弗洛伊德的死。抗议行动是基于多年的组织和越来越多的人死于警察暴行。
It arrives at a moment in which the public's patience for police misconduct has been expended. So the George Floyd video arrives after the video of Philando Castile in Minneapolis, after the video of Jamar Clark in Minneapolis, but also after the video of Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Laquan McDonald.
一些示威者指出，新冠疫情是怎么成为促进全国抗议活动持续发展的助力的。
I already have to fight systemic racism. I have to fight a virus that I do not understand, that no one understands, and you're still killing me on national TV. Like, just something's got to give.
今年，社交媒体筹款人和请愿书伴随着街头集会同时出现。
You have the highest unemployment rate you've ever seen before. People actually have the time right now to go out into the streets. Now you realize that you and your friends can, you know, create a petition, can sign something, can, you know, get folks out on the street, can volunteer to bring water.
最近几周走上街头的非裔美国人指出，针对他们的歧视和暴力并不是什么新鲜事。
I live it, right? Because I was born a black woman, right? So this is not something that I'm just coming to realize.
活动人士指出，社交媒体的组织和教育的增加，促进了人们对示威运动的认识。
Young people crafting hashtags, crafting messages, engage in serial strategic disruption of daily life, globalizing the message, tying it to a set of public policy reforms, and pushing the conversation, changing the civic vocabulary.
尽管2020年黑人生命主题的抗议活动具体情况与以往有所不同，但活动人士认为，目前的运动是多年组织的结果。
Based on my 25 years doing this work around the country, this is a serious moment at the dawn of a movement. I thought so 5 years ago.I don't think I was wrong.
布鲁克斯和基层活动人士相信，目前的运动将影响真正的变革，并指出这一运动已经引发了地方和联邦政府关于警察改革的讨论。美国之音记者。
新常态之中，视频会议已经独领风骚，不过人们仍然有可能受到干扰。在这个时候，虚拟现实技术就提供了另外一种选择。
如果你曾经参加过这样的电话会议，你可能有过人们同时发言的经历。然后呢，还有这种情况。
If someone's dog comes into it or someone stops paying attention,
那么你可能会错过别人在说什么。瑞安·奥滕斯上的虚拟现实，也就是 VR 在线商务课，消除了视频电话会议打岔分神的困扰。
I can't see my phone. I can't see an email pop up. So I'm fully focused on a great learning environment.
帕格尼虚拟现实公司通过他们的奇美拉项目，创造出奥斯腾在坦普大学课堂上的虚拟现实经验。学生以化身出现在虚拟课堂，而老师则化身或以直播或预录的真人录像出现。
This still gets the feeling of.Being a community, our sound is positional. So if that person spoke and they were to my left, I knew to look to the left and I would see them.
随着虚拟现实硬件的改进，手机和手持控制器得以通过摄像头和传感器追踪头部和手部的动作。当参与者的手在现实世界中移动，他们化身的手也会跟着动作。随着需求的增加，最大的挑战是要在大流行病的封锁期间买到虚拟现实耳机。随着工厂重新开始生产耳机
，hardware availability a lot of it is where the hardware is manufactured. So a point being made that a lot of this is coming from China.
奥滕斯警告说，任何想要尝试虚拟现实会议的人，每次沉浸在沉重的耳机里的时间都不应超过一小时。
Usually the dizziness and headaches would start towards the last 5 to 10 minutes. I could tell.It was right around the time. It was almost like my body's like I'm done.
虚拟现实的其他应用包括礼拜仪式和娱乐活动。美国之音记者李爱琳报道。
好的，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容。感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。